Welcome to The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. This week marks 1 year since Karen Bass took over as mayor of Los Angeles. In some ways, it feels like it was forever ago. In some ways, it feels like it was just yesterday. Throughout the campaign, which we covered so much here on The Issue Is, homelessness was the big issue. It's still the big issue. There's still a lot of questions in terms of how many homeless people are even on the streets. There's no doubt that there are thousands of people who have been brought inside thanks to the mayor's efforts. We discussed all of that with her this week in East L.A. at a rehab or facility that helps prevent crime and gang activity as she's been crisscrossing the city. And here is our full extended conversation with the mayor of Los Angeles.
Welcome to The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson, and with us now is the mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass. Great to see you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
We are here at the Soledad Enrichment Action, where they focus on gang prevention, crime prevention.
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is part of your whirlwind tour of LA this week, focusing on city services and crime prevention and business growth. But of course, the biggest issue remains homelessness.
That's
the reason you jumped into this race. It's the thing that people talk about the most. And this week we learned that we have 21,000 people have been taken off the streets by your administration.
Right.
Your goal was to get 17,000 people off the streets. How would you assess the homeless response so far?
Well, you know, what was fascinating, Alex, is that we found that the system was really, really broken in so many different areas. For example, there really wasn't a concrete system in place to track who people are who are coming off the street and what happens to them. So I feel very good that we've been able to get so many people out of tents and into motels, and that we have dispelled the myth that people don't want to leave the streets. I think that's been so important. And frankly, I think we could eliminate the vast majority of street homelessness if we had enough motel rooms. And then yesterday we launched the RV effort, because that's also been a real problem in a lot of neighborhoods. We didn't know if we could do it, but we cleared a whole block of RVs. So now we have a strategy to do that as well.
Well, and onto that point about not being able to track, I mean,
right,
the way that we track homeless right now is every January,
right,
volunteers go out with like a clipboard.
That's
and either
right.
drive around or walk around and try to count how many homeless people they have. And that period, that's said, which doesn't seem like the most accurate
it
way
isn't.
To do it. And then the rest of the year, do we have any idea how many homeless people are on
no,
the streets?
No, we do not. And we also have no system to track who is falling into homelessness. So you've heard me say several times throughout this year that I've been worried about the inflow because of the COVID protections going away, the eviction moratorium, rents going up. And so we have established a program to attempt to prevent people from being evicted and staying housed. But a lot of what we've done this year has been pure experimental. However, we are trying to put in place, in collaboration with LASA, the Los Angeles County Homeless Service Agency, a better data tracking system.
So essentially, we don't know right now if there are more people on the streets
exactly.
or fewer people on the streets than when you started.
We do not know. And as you pointed out, even when we do the count, it's the best system we have right now, but it's not all that accurate.
So should we change the system? I mean, should there be a way in this era of data, when we have AI, when we're California, we lead the world in tech, to figure out a way to keep track of this? So you guys, because right now you're essentially flying blind, right?
Absolutely. But you know what, though? We absolutely see how to put in place a system that once we know someone is homeless, once we bring them into a motel, that we will be able to track them better moving forward. But literally, as you've heard me say all year, that we're building the plane and flying it too. Well, at the county, who is responsible for the tracking, they're building the plane and flying as well. And there's brand new leadership at LASA.
So one of the new systems that you created is Inside Safe.
That's
the
right.
idea, basically, you buy up or rent hotels and motels and take
right.
people out of an encampment and put them into a hotel or a motel. So far, you say about 2,000 people have gone into interim housing via this.
Right.
255 people into permanent housing because of this.
Right.
It costs $67 million.
That's right.
Is 255 people in permanent housing a good rate of investment for $67 million?
No, it should be many more people going into permanent housing. But you know, that's one of the problems that we have discovered. Every step of the way, we've encountered barriers. But what we're doing different this time is that we're knocking those barriers down. Because prior to this year, the de facto policy of the city and the county was people were left on the street until there was permanent housing. So one of the biggest lessons of this year is that our city lacks a long-term system of interim housing.
So we know when we have, say, a fire, right? You open up at a high school or the warehouse somewhere, they put a bunch of cots out or they try to give place people a place to go. Is there any value in doing that and saying you can't camp on the street anymore, enforce the anti-camping laws, and make people go into some sort of shelter?
Well, let me just tell you, that's a lot easier said than done, because I think if you use that method, what's going to wind up happening is you're going to arrest people. They'll be arrested for 5 minutes and they'll be right back on the street. But I do want to look at some other innovative models. Let me tell you one that I learned from Culver City, safe camping, where they actually had a parking lot and they had tents there, but they were very high-end tents. That might be a heck of a lot cheaper than a motel room. So moving into year two, you will see us employing a variety of different strategies, because one of the biggest challenges is us getting to scale. To me, it's clear how we get people out of street homelessness, but being able to get to the scale of 46,000, that's the big challenge.
If it is 46,000.
If it is 46,000,
so,
that's right.
You describe this problem as like peeling an onion, right? As you peel it back, you realize more barriers, and you've said that you sometimes cry when you peel the onion, and sometimes you cry when you see the barriers. What's been the most surprising barrier that you've figured out?
The most ridiculous barrier is that for somebody to qualify for housing, they have to prove their income. Well, if you're in a tent, you have no income. How do you prove nothing? Also, if you're in a tent and you need housing, you have to have a government-issued ID. But if you don't have an address, how is it that you're going to have a government-issued ID? So when I found out about that barrier, now it took me months, but I was able to get that waived. But that was through the relationship I have with the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development. I went back to D.C. a number of times and I said, look at this. The president wants to reduce homelessness. This is a ridiculous barrier that you have in place. They worked with me. It took several months, but we got it done. And then as soon as we were able to eliminate that barrier, we found another one. So I think what is different in my administration, though, is that we're in search of these barriers and we are systematically knocking them down.
We've spent a lot of money on this.
That's right.
Way before you took over. And it seems like the more money we spend, the worse the problem gets. And you understand why a lot of people are frustrated.
Absolutely.
Is it a money issue? Is it that we need more funds? Or is it something else, sort of radically different approach?
Well, let me just tell you that all of the above, sure, more money is needed to build. But money is not the only answer. You have to deal with these bureaucratic barriers. That's not a money issue. For example, fast-tracking building. Developers would tell us that the reason why it's so expensive, you know, people were outraged at how much housing it costs to build homeless housing, right? But that's because of the bureaucracy. If you eliminate the bureaucracy and fast track, you can build much cheaper. But let me just tell you one thing, Alex. If you think it's expensive to house people, it's far more expensive to leave them on the street.
I mean, is homelessness solvable?
It is solvable. I absolutely believe that.
So paint me a picture, though. A year from now, what are we looking at?
Oh, a year from now, there'll be far more units that are in place. There'll be more people going into permanent housing. There will be better services, and we will be able to track people better. So next year this time, I think we'll have a data system in place that will actually be able to tell you who, not necessarily to tell you how many people are unhoused, but what happens to them once they come into the system.
Right. Meanwhile, you're also talking crime this week.
Yes.
And you're hiring more cops, right?
Yes.
And spending more money on this.
1,000 officers applied, and that's a lot more since 2020.
But there's still a lot of people that feel like things are less safe. They
right.
feel like on the streets of LA, people are not held accountable. They're not held right. accountable for their crimes. They're not held accountable for sleeping on the streets. They're not held accountable for leaving trash on the street. Right. There isn't this feeling. How do you change that perception and change that substantively?
Well, let me just tell you, we have recruited more officers, but they're not even on the force yet. I went and I talked to a group of 60 individuals today, and they are part of our recruitment efforts. Remember, the recruitment efforts started about 4 months ago, mm-hmm. so we haven't even graduated the first class. But I think that crime has to be dealt with in a comprehensive way, and I do think there's misperceptions. For example, a lot of people believe when the smash and grab robberies happen that those people are just in and out of jail if they ever make it to jail, and that's not true. Those are felony crimes. There's many people that were involved in smash and grabs that are still in jail. The task force that we put together was not a task force to study the issue. It was a task force to bring different aspects of law enforcement together to solve the issue.
Up next, what Bass learned from the fire that shut down the 10 freeway and the search for the person responsible.
We're talking with the mayor of Los Angeles, Karen Bass. When the 10 freeway caught on fire,
yes,
you sort of went to work, right?
Right?
We saw you around the clock doing press conferences, out there every day.
Right.
The freeway was maybe going to be closed for months. It turned out
right.
it was only closed for a week, which some good luck and a lot of help on mm-hmm. that. What was the lesson learned from that entire experience?
Well, first of all, the first lesson was learned in 1994. I mean, I remember when the 10 freeway fell. So the urgency.
Northridge earthquake.
Yes, the urgency.
Freeway pancakes. Yeah.
That's right. The urgency that I felt really was based in that past experience. But I know 300,000 cars a day drive across the 10. What this would do to the city in general, students, families, the workforce, the businesses that were located near the freeway that had a 45% drop in customers because of the closure of the freeway, to me that was an absolute emergency. Now, we thought the freeway was going to have to come down, but fortunately, when they were able to get into the damage, they saw that the freeway had actually been retrofitted years ago, and they didn't realize that in the beginning, so we were able to get it fixed quickly.
At the beginning, we were told that there was an arsonist. Any
yes.
update in terms of
yes.
the search for a suspect?
No, I don't have an update. And by the way, that's being handled by the state. But by the way, the other lesson learned was I don't think any of us realized about the property that is rented beneath the freeway.
Right.
And that's not Los Angeles. This is a nationwide issue. And I found out that the city of LA was one of the tenants. So the first thing I had to do was to make sure our own house is in order, and it is.
But you do see, and we don't know if this was a homeless person that started it
right.
or not, we don't know, but we know that there are problems with homeless encampment fires.
Yes,
that
let
is
me
an
just
issue.
Tell you something.
Yeah.
One thing I know for sure is that an encampment was not the cause of that fire because the encampments weren't close enough, and that fire was far too ferocious. So we do know it was an arsonist. We don't know if that arsonist, if that individual happened to be an unhoused person. But you know, Alex, one of the things that was really troubling to me was the vitriol on social media directed toward unhoused Angelenos, where everybody on social media, whatever that means, made an assumption that it was an unhoused person. And then I was worried that there was going to be violence directed toward the unhoused community because of the anger of the 10 freeway.
But you think, and obviously not all this is a city thing, as you mentioned, but more needs to be done to clean up under the freeways.
Oh, I think that will be done. I know that the state, as well as LA Fire, checked underneath the freeway and found out that in all the freeways in the city, there's about 15 locations that might be problematic, and those are being addressed.
You said something kind of provocative at the time. You said that it wouldn't have been fixed as quickly if Donald Trump was president instead of Joe Biden. What
yes.
did you mean by that?
What I meant by that is that if you remember every week of the Trump administration, he was having infrastructure week and never passed one piece of legislation or funded one program. the Biden administration, the day of the fire, I was called by Secretary Buttigieg, the vice president called the next day. They made it clear that it was all hands on deck, and anything that we needed, they were going to be there. I think if Trump had been president, he'd say it's a Democratic city. To heck with them, because that's the way he treated Democrats and Democratic cities in the 4 years he was president.
I mean, you sort of have the unique perspective of you've sat in meetings with both of them, both Donald Trump and Joe Biden.
That's
correct. You're almost Joe Biden's vice president. What's it like? Bring us in the room of what it's like to be in a meeting with Joe Biden and a meeting with Donald Trump.
Well, I think what it's like to be in a meeting with President Biden is he's very personable. He is somebody that is very in tune to the average American. And so you connect with him right away. I mean, that's why when he was senator, he used to ride Amtrak every day and would spend all the time going up and down and meeting with the customers. When I sat in a room with President Trump, I just have to tell you that his behavior is childlike. And the idea that this man could conceivably be president again, I think that it sends chills, not just around the country, but around the globe.
But you've seen the polls. You see he's doing well in the polls. You see that two-thirds of Democrats think that Joe Biden is too old. You see that young people are the least excited about Joe Biden. What do you think these voters are getting wrong?
I think we're far off from the election right now, and that there is a lot of time. I do believe, I mean, seriously, just think about this. Donald Trump has been indicted, 91 times.
Yeah.
He is facing trials. As a matter of fact, he's so busy going to court, he doesn't feel that he needs to campaign. But the idea that this individual could potentially be back in the White House, and the damage that he has done, frankly, to our country, to our institutions, the idea that that could be repeated again, I do believe as we get closer to the election, number one, people will see all that the Biden administration was able to accomplish. And I do think that that's one of our weaknesses, is that I think that not enough attention has been paid to promoting the accomplishments of the Biden administration.
When you say our weaknesses, you mean Democrats?
Yes, I mean Democrats. As a Democrat, I think we need to do better in tooting our own horn.
You need to toot that horn.
Yeah.
Okay. Well...
It was wonderful to work with partners.
When we come back, Karen Bass's best day.
This is a killer who is preying on the unhoused.
And worst day as mayor of Los Angeles.
We are talking with Mayor Karen Bass, and I want to give you a chance to toot your own horn about this last year as we sort of look at it. These are rapid fire questions. First thing that comes to mind about the year, 1 year in. What was the best day as mayor?
You know, the best day is when I meet somebody who was on the street and they tell me that now they're housed, they have a job, and that they're safe.
And you had that experience this week of meeting somebody. I know you were doing a press conference and a gentleman came up to you and said, I was on the street and I wouldn't have been if it wasn't for you.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? That happens to me a lot. And that was totally random. He just rode up on his bike and he said, you got me off the street and I have a job and I'm housed now. And that kind of, overwhelming love has been very exciting.
Worst day.
My worst day? Oh, gosh. The freeway, the hurricane, the serial killer.
You're talking about the serial killer of homeless people.
The serial killer of homeless people. And I think that a lot of Angelenos don't realize the violence that is inflicted upon the unhoused population. And I'm not saying violence by people who are unhoused. Of course, that happens. But I mean random violence.
Hindsight 2020, that looking back, you wish you had a do-over on? Or you would do differently if you knew more?
Well, you know what? One of the things I could have done is I could have spent the first few months really studying the system of homelessness. And I wished I knew all that I know now on day one. But I just felt the urgency was so critical that I had to just jump in and act and learn along the way. But when you do it that way, you run into a lot of challenges that you didn't expect.
Is it fair to say the system is more effed up than you thought?
It is absolutely fair to say that.
Okay. What do you think is the biggest misconception about you in this job?
I think one of the biggest misconceptions is people assuming that I would not do the things I said I was going to do. And I think that's what surprises people is that I said I was going to do things, and I'm doing exactly what I said I was going to do. Now, we set out with a comprehensive plan around homelessness. Now, that has changed as we've learned and shifted and moved. I never thought of Inside Safe before I took office. But I do think that there was a conception that because I had been in office that I really was not going to do any of the things I said I was going to do.
Up next, Mayor Bass plays personal issues holiday style. For more of this conversation and all of our guest interviews, search for the Issue Is podcast wherever you stream.
We were talking to Mayor Karen Bass. It's the holiday season. You know, on our show, we like to play personal issues. So this is the rapid fire holiday inspired questions to get to know your holiday favorites. Okay.
Okay.
What's your favorite holiday song?
Silent Night.
Favorite holiday food?
Turkey. Turkey and dressing, the traditional meal.
Favorite holiday tradition?
Decorating the tree with my kids and grandkids and making s'mores in the fireplace.
Oh, very nice. Should the holiday lights go up before or after Thanksgiving?
After.
I agree with that.
December.
The holidays is a moment for reflection for a lot of people. Obviously, the 1 year is a moment for reflection. The holidays is as well. And what's your holiday message for the people of Los Angeles and the people of California?
My holiday message for the people of Los Angeles is I just want to give thanks. Thanks for the privilege of serving as your mayor. Thanks for all of the goodwill and support that I've received this year. And to double down on my commitment to follow through with the reason why I ran to begin with, which is we have to solve so many people being unhoused in our city. And we live in the greatest city in the world, and we need to prepare to welcome the world in a few years.
Well, one promise you've kept is you promised that you would come back on The Issue Is after you were elected. So I appreciate you doing this. I appreciate the periodic check-ins. Great to see you.
Thank you.
Happy holidays to you and to your wonderful family.
Thank you. Same to you and yours.
Thank you. And thank you for watching The Issue Is.
Our thanks to Mayor Karen Bass. Next week on The Issue Is, we talk to the governor of California, Gavin Newsom. In the meantime, thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time for more of The Issue Is.